Reading from Shrijatana Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 1731. Please, can you repeat? Prabhu Jala Kritya Kare Age Hasti Aila.
Prabhu Jala Kritya Kare Age Hasti Aila.
Krishna Kaha Bali Prabhu Jala Feli Marila. Prabhu Jala Kritya Kare Agev Hasti Aila. Krishna Kaha Bali Prabhu Jala Feli Marila. Prabhu Jala Kritya Kare Agev Hasti Aila. Krishna Kaha Bali Prabhu Jala Feli Marila. Prabhu Jala Kritya Kare Age Asti Aila. Krishna Kaha Bali Prabhu Jala Feli Marila. Prabhu Kale Sihaya
Krishna Kahabali Prabhu Jalapeli Marila.
Prabhu Jala Kritya Kare Age Asti Haila. Translation. While the Lord was breathing and murmuring the Gayatri Mantra, the elephants came before him. The Lord immediately splashed some water on the elephant and asked them to chant the name of Krishna. Purported by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, playing the part of a very great advanced devotee. On the Mahabhagavat platform, the devotee makes no distinction between friends and enemies. On that platform, he sees everyone as a servant of Krishna. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 5:18, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmane Gavihastini Suni Chavasapake Cha Pandita Samadashina. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater, outcast. Mahabhagavat, being learned and advanced in spiritual consciousness, sees no difference between a tiger, an elephant, or a learned scholar. The test of advanced spiritual consciousness is that one becomes fearless. He envies no one and is always engaged in the Lord's service. He sees every living entity as an eternal part and parcel of the Lord, rendering service according to his capacity by the will of the Supreme Lord. As Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarva Sacharam Hidi Sani Visto Matya Smiti Gyanam Apona Mahamcha. There's more, but I'm seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The Mahabhagavat knows that Krishna is in everyone's heart. Krishna is dictating, and the living entity is following his dictations. Krishna is within the heart of the tiger, elephant, and boar. Therefore, Krishna tells them, "Here is the Mahabhagavat. Please do not disturb him." Why then should the animals be envious of such a great personality? Those who are neophytes and even those who are a little progressed in devotional service should not try to imitate the Mahabhagavat. Again, those who are neophytes like us and even those who are a little progressed in devotional service should not try to imitate the Mahabhagavat. Rather, they should follow in his footstep. This is interesting. On one hand, don't imitate. On one hand, follow in his footstep. The word anukara means imitating. And anusara means trying to follow in his footsteps. We should not try to imitate the activities of Mahabhagavat or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Our best effort should be exerted in trying to follow them according to our ability. The Mahabhagavat's heart is completely free from material contamination, and it can become very dear even to fierce animals like tigers and elephants. Indeed, the Mahabhagavat treats them as his very intimate friends. On this platform, there is no question of envy. When the Lord was passing through the forest, he was in ecstasy, thinking the forest to be Vrindavan. He was simply searching for Krishna. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyana Gyana Shalakaya Chakshumilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Pramukadama Yam Dedati Swapadantikam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagadpati Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostiti Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radha Vindavanishwari Vishabhanasati Devi Paramami Hari Priye Banjakapatarubhyascha kripasindhyubhyavacha patitan pavanibhyo vishnavibhyo namo namaha mukham garudvacha nam pangalangayate girin yakkapathamaham bandhu sri guru jinatayana paramananamadva Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gauru Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Dobrodosli. What's that? Hey, someone tell me the joke. I want to laugh too. Wala papa. You're welcome. And as usual, we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Lord travels to Vrindavan. Translation again. While the Lord was breathing and murmuring the Gayatri Mantra, the elephants came before him. The Lord immediately splashed some water on the elephant and asked them to chant the name of Krishna. Okay. The translation is just about, not just. It's about the Gayatri Mantra. It's about chanting the Gayatri Mantra. But in the purport, Prabhupada has unpacked a lot of things. So we'll try to see how to squeeze all of that into today's discussion. And there are two main things in the purport. The issue or the topic of equal vision and the behavior and characteristics of Mahabhagavat. And these two are related in one way or the other. But before we start talking, as usual, I'll ask you all to bless me to say something that is beneficial to everybody, and especially myself. And that said, as usual, if you can all come closer, it'll be nice. If not, we can manage. Usually the asana was there, now it's here, so maybe so that, but still, if you can come a little bit closer, it will do me some favor. If not, we can still manage, no problem. Let's quickly look at, this story is interesting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was trying to do his Gayatri, when this elephant came and was splashing. And those of us who have visited India, at some point in time, if you have had the chance, usually, like when I was in India during the summer, when the summer is really, really intense. This was during Chaitanya Prabhu's travels anyway. But when the summer is high, usually I go to the Ganga around 4. And I stay there till 6:30. Just this deep. Just trying to cool off. So usually, just before I will leave, it will be sunset. And India, the day is pretty normal. I mean, in the sense that the seasons are, the sun rises and sets almost throughout the same time of the year. So by 6:30, the sun is already going down. So at that time, you see so many devotees who are there at the Ganga, either waist deep, doing their Gayatri, you know. So it's one of the practices, one of the ways to chant Gayatri is waist deep in water. Some say chest deep, you know, but whatever. The idea is you're inside water and at least the water should be high enough to cover your upavita when chanting. Now that's just on the part of Gayatri. So the interesting point here is that an elephant came and, you know, he wasn't disturbing the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada tries to explain, or he explains, not tries, he explains here that the devotee makes no distinction, and he quotes the famous verse 5:18. Pandita Samadashana, this pandit, or this learned person, he can see with equal vision that this is a spirit soul in a female body. This is a spirit soul in a male body. This is a spirit soul in a dog body. This is a spirit soul in an elephant's body. But at the end of the day, it's all the same. Now, this is one very interesting thing that, you know, the irony is, I'm trying to write something on this also. For those of you who know, I've been writing a bit. I have this blog I've been writing. And one of the topics I have in my mind to write about is, we are not this body. ? Really? But maybe I'll write it maybe this week, next week, I don't know. But it's interesting that I have that in mind, and the verse that is chosen today speaks about the same thing. Because the first philosophy we learn when we come to the movement is, you are not this body. It's the first thing. As a devotee, neophyte, you must have heard that already. You're not this body. You must have heard that also. You're not this body. It's the first thing you're told. Then you say, oh, what am I? Then you say, oh, you're a spirit soul. So, okay. Nevim. He said, don't worry, you will know. You know, so that's the first thing you learn. You're not this body. But to what degree do we actually understand we are not this body? Now, there are different levels of this. Different levels. The highest level will be to understand who you really are, not just understanding that you are some soul. That's very far. Let's still come down. Let's not go too far. Let's come somewhere in between. Now, this verse is saying that Chaitanya Prabhu, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead acting as a devotee, because he's on the level of a learned pandit, according to this verse, he didn't make any decision. Oh, this is an elephant. This is this. And in the story of the Jarikanda forest, while he was chanting and dancing, there were elephants, there were tigers, there were all kinds of wild animals. But he could make them chant and dance because he was seen definitely beyond the body. We will come to that, but that's just a quick reference. Back to us. We learn every time that we are not this body. We quote it, we say, oh, who are you? I'm not this body. What are you? I'm a spirit soul. I'm Brahmasmi. Nabuto. Very quickly we say it. But then, we're very quick to make distinctions. Very quick. Now, someone might reference a lecture from Prabhupada that says, oh, we must make distinctions. You know? Yes, we must make distinctions because we are not on the level yet to see that everything is, that every soul is the same. So we have to make distinctions. Ultimately, you should not make distinctions. But because you're not qualified yet, so yes, you have to make distinctions. It's like Prabhupada says, you know, ultimately I want you all to chant 24 hours every day, but because you can't, so I created service to keep you busy. But ultimately, you should chant 24 hours every day, but I know you can't. So, you know, do this, do this, do this, do this, ultimately so that you are thinking of Krishna at the end of the day. So ultimately, we should not make distinctions, but because we can't, okay, you know, make some distinctions. Sounds contradictory. How can you say make some distinctions when the verse is saying he sees with equal vision? But that's, I'm just saying what we are doing. I'm not saying that's what we should do. You know, I have happened to live in a community, one of our biggest communities, and it was a concern recently. My friend wrote that in our biggest community, you still have factions. Bengali, Russian, Japanese, South American, and everybody is just sticking to their group, their pack. What's the point? And you cannot really associate with this group if you're not, if you don't have the same body with them. You know? Someone says, oh, but you know, it's for convenience. You know, the Russian devotees don't understand English, so we have their own class separate. That's not the idea. It's the separatist mentality that is just manifesting on the outside. Now, you can justify it in any which way you like, but does it make sense? So, you know, when we say we are not this body, really? We're not this body, but we're quick to identify, oh, this devotee is Russian devotee. That is Bengali devotee. This is American devotee. This is African devotee. Devotee is devotee. Why you put the tag in front? You put the tag in front, it means you're still conditioned. You still see something. You don't see the soul, you're seeing something else. So if you have to describe a devotee and you say, this devotee, what's the point? Makes no sense. But that's the first thing we all learn. The very first thing we learn when we come to for those who join, you know, you are not this body. You're a spirit soul. But 15, 20, 25, 30 years after, it is still a problem. And not just in terms of nationality, in terms of gender also. This person is a female devotee. This person is a male devotee. This is a this devotee. Now, that doesn't mean that we do not identify that there are certain externals which we have. But we do not classify a devotee by these externals. Now, if you cannot even see devotees as being devotees, how can you see animal and devotee to be the same soul? That is just impossible. If you cannot see fellow human beings, devotee human beings now, as spirit souls, what makes you think you can see the dog to be a spirit soul? Not to talk of the dog eater. You know, so in theory it's easy. Who are you? I'm not this body. What are you? Spirit soul. Anybody can say that. So how does this mentality affect us as devotees? A Maha Bhagavat being learned and advanced in spiritual consciousness sees no difference between a tiger, an elephant, or a learned scholar. Then Prabhupada says, the test of spiritual advancement is that one becomes fearless. Now, it's not ironical that Sri Prabhupada's name is Abhay Charana Vrinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Abhaya means one who is fearless. Now, there is fear for so many reasons. Fear actually is born from ignorance. Now, beyond that is, when you see elephant, you see tiger, you see Russian, you see this, then you are afraid of interacting. You are afraid of having deeper relationships on a higher spiritual level because you have ignorance about what that external is. When you see tiger, you are afraid because on the external you see a wild animal. You don't know what it's going to do. That's the fear from the ignorance of what this will do. But if you see spirit soul, and you're actually on that level, then there's no problem. There's a story of one Goswami, Ananta Prabhu, can you remember? The one who was always going to chant by the lake, and Jaya Shishi go on the Ki Jaya Shishi Pancha Tatwa Ki Jaya. Huh? I think so. He used to go to the riverside to chant, and while chanting, he will get lost in trance and forget himself externally. And a tiger used to come there about the same time to drink from the river. And this is a tiger. So Srimad Radharani had to always come and, you know, make sure that he was safe. So I think it was Sanatana Goswami, if I'm not mistaken, but someone can double check. And I think his brother, I think Rupa or someone else told him that, hey, either Jiva or Sanatana, I don't know. But I think Rupa then told me, hey, you cannot keep doing this. Because you're giving Srimad Radharani work to do, you know, having to look after you every time. Because you're going there to chant and you're forgetting yourself, and this tiger comes there to drink water and it can eat you. But because, you know, you're doing service, the Supreme Lord has to always come and look after you. You're giving him work to do. Stop it. You know, but he's, and that's a Mahabhagavat. Now, the name you can double check, but I can't remember now. But because he is totally absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, whether a tiger is there or not, and there's another story also. I think it was, is it Chota Haridas who was chanting in the cave and there was a snake there and people were scared for him? Haridas, okay, he was chanting in the cave and there was this snake, and you know, the snake ultimately said that, you know, I'm disturbing this pure devotee, and let me leave. You know, but that doesn't just happen like that. And Prabhupada stresses that here. He says, I have to find it. It says, okay, Krishna is within the heart of the tiger, elephant, and boar. And therefore Krishna tells them, here is a Mahabhagavat. So you might say, but how does it happen if I go in front of a tiger and I say, yes, I know you're a spirit soul, you're gonna get killed. You know? Because Krishna tells Krishna in the heart, say, hey, this guy is a rascal, he's a pretender. Yeah, so Krishna is telling the boar, the tiger, that no, this is a Mahabhagavat, let him be. Krishna tells the snake, you know, this is Haridas, let him chant, don't disturb. If it's difficult to believe that Krishna is telling the animal within the heart, at least the story of the Goswami confirms that Krishna Srimati Radharani actually comes, you know, and protects him to make sure that this tiger doesn't disturb. So but look at the interesting thing is this, that Krishna would not, the super soul in the heart of the animal will not speak to the animal if you are a pretender. That's why it says don't imitate. So if you think you are Haridas and you go and stay in a cave with a dangerous snake, Hari Hari Ball. You know, if you think that you are Sanatana Goswami or whoever this Goswami is, I can't remember the name, please forgive me, and you go and chant where there are tigers, Hari Hari Ball, because Krishna is going to tell that tiger, hey, this guy is a rascal. He's pretending, you know, have a nice meal. And you're gone. Now, if this is difficult to understand, it's very interesting, because sometimes, I mean, for those of us who know that the Bible is an extension of Bhavishya Purana, if you stretch it across, there's the story of David, who was thrown into the lion's den by some king. And no one survives that den. But they came the next day, he was still there. And the king asked him, I said, how did you survive? And David said, I'm paraphrasing. He said, the Lord sent his angels to close the mouth of the lions. Same thing. Krishna, either coming in person or, now the angels here, we can extrapolate that to mean the super soul if we want to, but it means the Supreme Lord talks to the animal that, you know, this is a pure devotee, don't touch. So it's not peculiar to just our tradition, it's everywhere. When there's a pure devotee of the Lord, the servant of the Lord, who is actually a Mahabhagavat, the Lord intervenes. But then, that's what Prabhupada said, don't imitate. And this is not just with animals now. Let us come back to human beings. So same thing. If you are seeing Chinese devotee, Russian devotee, Bengali devotee, American devotee, African devotee, Slovene devotee, then the Lord in the heart of that devotee is going to reciprocate with you the same way. And that's why there will never be peace when we have all these factions, this group, that group, this group, this group, this group. There will never be peace. Because the Lord in their heart is speaking to them based on their own consciousness, and they are also acting based on that consciousness. And then we have this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But then, you see that whenever there is a genuine pure devotee around, all these groups come together. Whenever there's a genuine pure devotee around, all these groups come together. So it shows that it's working somehow. For a moment, everybody forgets whether they are Bengali or Russian or American or whatever. They all come, oh, there's this devotee around, let's go see. And we can all sit down in the same hall. But once it's gone, poof, we're back to where we are. I'm this, I'm that, you're this, you're that. So when the pure devotee comes, or a real Mahabhagavat comes, it has the potency to neutralize that distinction that you're seeing and bring them together in one place. If that is too difficult to understand, Srila Prabhupada left India, went to the West, created a movement around the whole globe for people from different parts of the world, and people can still function together because Prabhupada is there. That Mahabhagavat could make all of us forget, at least for some time, that we are not the body. The moment he left, yes, everybody remembered that they are the body again. And that's the problem we're having. We're thinking we're this, we're that, we're this, we're that. Now, some people might argue, but this kind of philosophy, does it not promote certain things which are not, I'm not saying anything out of context. Whatever I'm saying is from here. But someone might argue that, this kind of philosophy might push people to act in ways that are not proper. That if we don't make distinction, then, maybe we should have the male and female toilet together. If we don't make distinction, then, there is no need for any separation. Everybody is the same. But that will only happen if the people actually are Mahabhagavats. Now, that doesn't mean that Mahabhagavats want to mix indiscriminately, no. But if people are on that level, they won't even notice it. Now, what is my reference for that? There are many examples of devotees in the scriptures who are Mahabhagavats, who we see do not identify with externals. Good example, Vyasadeva and his son, Sukadeva Goswami. Both of them pass by a group of ladies, young girls in their teens, bathing naked in the pool. Sukadeva Goswami passed, a young boy also. They don't cover themselves, they're going about their normal business. Vyasadeva passed, everybody's covered. Now, don't forget Vyasadeva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, the literal incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. But then, they said, but why are you covering? He said, no, this is an avaduta. He's not seeing our body. But this one can make difference. Now, ultimately, Vyasadeva will not make a difference. But in that lila, you can see, they say, no, this person is in contact with certain things. He has to come down to a point where he can make difference so he can teach. But this one who just came, the son, he's not making that difference. He's another dude. He's even walking around naked. And there are many examples which I don't want to go into to disturb people's mind. So am I saying that people should act on this kind of level? Nope. Again, Prabhupada stresses it. The word anukara means imitating. And the word anusara means trying to follow in the footsteps. So, where do you draw the line between imitation and following? Good question. Answer is given. We should not try to imitate the activity of the Bhagavat. Our best effort should be exerted in trying to follow them according to our ability. So that's the answer. How do you follow without copying? How do you follow without imitating? You follow according to your ability. Following according to your ability means very simple. If you know deep inside you that you don't see a snake as a super soul, why should you go sit in the same cave with a snake? It's not in your ability to do that. You're going to kill yourself. It's not in your ability to drink poison. So if you do it like Shiva, hari hari ball, you're going. It's not in your ability to sit where tigers are and chant. If you do it, you are going. So your ability dictates what you can do. And your ability dictates how you should follow. Now, if you try to say, but maybe I can do it. Maybe it's within my ability. Well, ultimately, we will see. You can also fake your ability. You can try to pretend that you have an ability that you don't actually have. But sooner or later, people will see it. It will come out. You know, you can't hide your ability for long. Especially if it's not real. It will come out. One sooner or later. We will know. So, now, ultimately, as Vaishnavas, as devotee, you know, it might be easy, in one sense, to say, oh, yeah, animals are spirit souls. That's why we don't eat them anyway. That's why we're vegetarians. We respect them. Maybe that's easy to do. Maybe. But then, how do you treat fellow devotees? You know, ahimsa is not until you cut someone's throat. Ahimsa is not until you eat animals. You know, being non-partial, being equal in vision, is not just saying it. It's actually doing it and meaning it. You know, this devotee is better than this devotee, so I treat this devotee well. What is your criteria for doing that? This devotee has better treatment than this devotee. What is your criteria for doing that? This devotee is closer to me because we are from the same place, so I can relate better to this devotee. So that devotee is not from where I'm from, so I cannot relate better to that devotee. Where is the equal vision there? And as long as we keep having these mental fractions, which are coming from our inability to see things higher than the externals, we cannot make real advancement. It's not possible. It's not possible. You cannot say, I am not this body. I am a spirit soul. I'm trying to understand who I am. Whereas, you cannot even see the spirit soul in other people or in other living entities. How? For you to get to that point where you actually understand who you are, really as a spirit soul, in whatever capacity and designation, it has to work from inside out and outside in. It's a simultaneous process. And that's why Srila Prabhupada could go to the West and make out of bums, homeless people, drug addicts, sex addicts, low life, useless people, hippies, name it. He could make pure devotees out of those people. Because someone else will go and say, yeah, nah, hell no, these people are finished. I mean, people who are having sex on the main road, not bathing for months, eating anything, doing anything, drinking anything, smoking anything, sleeping anywhere, had practically no material life direction, not to talk of spiritual. I mean, what can you do with such people materially even? But still, those same people are pure devotees today. Because it took someone to see beyond that. Someone to say, no, 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 This is not this person. There is more. And not just saying it because you want the person to feel good. No. See, that's the problem also. We're not saying that we should not, we should make false, but that's the point also, trying to pretend, trying to imitate. If you're not on the level of proper and you're trying to go to a place also and trying to associate with people who are low class, in quote low class, like hippies, in quote, and you're not on that standard, ultimately you might start getting the association. But because Prabhupada is a Mahabhagwat, he was able to give his association. And they took his association and then they become someone like, something like him. So if you're a real Mahabhagwat, not only do you actually see that there's no difference, but by your association you can bring people up to your level. So there's the proof. Okay, I see everybody as equal, but then everybody around you is in a mess. So it depends on what you're seeing, you know. Maybe that's what you actually see, that's why they are a mess. But if you actually see them as spirit souls, you will bring them up to that level as spirit souls. And Prabhupada did that. You know, from this same all kind of people, we have wonderful devotees today. Wonderful devotees. But it took someone who was on that level to see it and bring them to that level. Because he knows originally what is inside this body is perfect. And that is why Chaitanya Prabhu could make animals chant. Because the soul is eternally a devotee. You know, it's eternally part and parcel of Krishna. So whatever the external is, I can still link this soul back to Krishna because I understand what this soul actually is about. But imagine if Chaitanya Prabhu was not a Mahabhagwat. Imagine if he was just some pretender walking to Jarikan forest. That would be the end of Chaitanya Lila. That would be the end. We just heard that there was this fake saint who was trying to pretend that he was an avatar. He walked into Jarikan forest and unfortunately he got eaten by tigers. That would be the end of that Lila. You understand? Now, Chaitanya Prabhu is not different from Krishna himself, so you might say, oh, but that's too far. I just gave an example of Srila Prabhupada. That's the closest one we can relate to, right here, not too far. So, seeing with equal vision is not just saying, okay, from today, everybody's Vaishnava, everybody's devotee, I will not call Vaishnavas, you know, with something before, you know. Yes, that's a good start. That's a very good start. But there is more. You know, so how do you get there? You try to follow in the footstep of previous acharyas according to your own ability. You know, malo malo. You know, ultimately you get there. But to the degree that we neglect this fact and we think, oh, it's just the external. It doesn't really matter. We cannot actually claim to understand that we ourselves are spirit souls. And I keep saying it. That's the very first thing we learn when those who join. When they join, that's the first thing they preach to them. You are not this body. Oh, them. Kai, say, what am I? I don't know. Says, oh, you're a spirit soul. Oh, okay. But then, you know, spirit soul. Some just accept it, hook, line, sinker. Okay, yeah, we're spirit souls. Okay, but in what capacity? But the more you understand you're a spirit soul, the more... Now, the beautiful thing about understanding that you're a spirit soul is not just that you're able to understand your eternal disposition. That is the ultimate goal. But the beautiful thing is... not just saying that you see everybody equally, but the beautiful thing is once you understand that you're not the body, the limitations the body places on you automatically disappears. Yes, I will explain. If you understand that you are not this body, in the real sense of it, as a Mahabhagavat would, the limitations of the material body doesn't act on you anymore. How? Explain to me, how does a 69-year-old man survive 2 heart attacks alone on the boat, still make it to a country with barely $2 in his pocket and start a movement? What was he staying? Where was he eating? How did he cope? Alone on a boat. 2 heart attacks. I can give you more examples. Definitely, he knew he was definitely not this body. There was something more. A normal, regular man of 50 has that. He will go. 60, is gone. 69, one heart attack is enough. And there are so many things Shepherd did physically, traveling around the world 14 times at that age. Most men that age can barely get up from their chair. All they sit at home and do is just play chess, drink tea, watch TV. At that age, write this many books, traveling the world 14 times, it's not the body working. There's something else in the body working. And is that person that is actually doing the work. The body is just, you know. Yes, there were still some times where Prabhupada showed, in quote, limitations. But if you look at it closely, there was a lot more he did for that body. That you put that weight on people who are 30 years old today, they'll pass out. Travel around the world that much, preach that much, write that much books within that short period of time. You give that schedule to a 30-year-old man today, he'll say, forget it, I can't. But why is that possible? Now, we're not trying to remove the ultimate factor, which is Krishna's mercy. That is always constant. It's a constant factor in the equation. You don't remove it. But there's so many other variables in the equation, which shows you that because this person understands that he is actually not the body, not just in theory, he can actually tap into the qualities of the soul. The soul is not limited. The soul can do anything it likes, anytime. So because the soul has the ability to do anything it likes anytime, when one is actually in tune, understanding that this is me, then the physical limitations of the body don't work anymore. The body is there, but that person, that individual can do things which are beyond the body's limitation. If that is difficult to understand, very easy. Yogis. When yogis acquire mystic siddhis, they still have material bodies. But they can do things which are beyond your understanding. Why? How? Because they've been able to connect on a deeper level that they can tap into the natural potency of the soul. And they can bring that potency outside. And then you see it, you're like, wow, magic. But because he's connecting from a point or a place where you and I cannot tap from, that is difficult to understand. A good example is, if you and I were to compete of who had the most money, and you had to bring money from your own pocket, and I had to take money from a vault, bank vault, where they store money. You know, it's called vault, you know? Who will run out of money first? You or me? If you were bringing from your own pocket, and I was bringing money from some bank vault, say World Bank, and we say, let's spend, let's see who has more money. You run out first because you are depending on what is in your pocket. I might not have money physically with me, but because I know I'm connected to World Bank's vault, I won't run out of money. At least not until you run out of money anyway. I mean, it might finish, but not until you run out first. So ultimately, what am I trying to say? When we identify with the body, we depend on the capacity of the body. And it's limited. When we identify with the soul, then we depend on the capacity or the ability of the soul, which is unlimited. So that's what Prabhupada says here. He says, we should try to follow according to our ability. Now, whose ability? Our. Is it the body's ability? Yes, initially. Initially, yes. But ultimately, we have to still tune inside, not just the outside. So this issue of we are not this body, please pray for me. I still have a lot to say, but there's no time. So probably this week I'll try and write something on this issue. And we're not this body in court, really. You know. So in summary, that seeing every devotee or every animal or whatever as being equal with equal vision is not just something in theory. There's a lot to it. To the degree to which we understand that, see that, practice that, to that degree, we also actually become Mahabhagavats. And I gave so many examples of many Mahabhagavats who actually understand this from our tradition, from other people's tradition, Christian tradition, from Goswamis, you can name them. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry I spoke 15 minutes more, but if there's any quick question, I've been seeing your hand. He's been, sorry, Prabhu.
I wanted to say that, not that the Prabhupada has expressed, this is probably the fourth apostle, which has to go to some experience that convinced us that we are not this body, and this can be achieved by the apostle, the same apostle, which is on this body, the physical platform, by not eating, we can realize we don't have to eat 15 times a day to survive. In the same sense, we can do the past in social field. So we forcibly associate with people from other groups and see that we don't die when we do that. And beyond sentiment, we could try in this direction. What do you think about this?
It's a good point, but there's something that strikes me there. Like, maybe it's the way you explain it, you know, maybe it's just English. If you see, and I stress it, if you see associating with other devotees from other groups or other nationality or other places as tapasya, something is wrong with you. Not you, that person. Something is wrong with that person. If you see associating... Yeah, but that's the fact we're saying, you know. If you think associating with some devotee in order to break your mental barrier about the body of that devotee, something is wrong with you. It means you just don't understand the fact that you're not the body. I mean, so what's the point of being in the movement? Yeah, ultimately, you know, ultimately, you're right. Ultimately, you know, one has to take the most bitter pill some way, somehow. But that shows how the mentality is. You know, if it's a tapasya for you or that whoever to even think that, you know, it's a tapasya for me to try to relate to this devotee. You know? Ultimately, it should stop being a tapasya. Okay. Mahaprabhu.
This argument not being the body. I was thinking about the seventh canto when Hiranyakashipu is preaching to his relatives.
Uh-huh.
And he displays a perfect philosophy, perfect understanding of not being the body.
Yeah.
But still, on the other hand, his mentality was not so transcendental.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is how to... Because we all know, most of us, we understand theoretically well the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita and so on.
Mm.
How do we connect the understanding, the faith with the actual realization? Because there is much difference between the two.
It's simple. For the simple. I mean, good example you gave. In Hiranyakashipu, he understood he was not this body. And he, like you said, he explained. And he was not just theoretical, he was able to prove it. I mean, standing that long, maintaining his life air within his bones, I mean, anthill growing on him, being able to draw down, you have to understand some principle beyond the body. But why was his mentality averse or against something that is normal or something that is Krishna conscious? That's the point. His mentality was averse Krishna consciousness because he was thinking that I am not this body. I think it's in the 16th of 17th chapter, that verse that says, Aham Bogi, Sudoham, Balawan Suki. You know, so 16. So he's saying that I'm not this body, yes, but whatever, like I said, whatever capacity or ability I can draw from that inside, it's for me. I'll explain. Now, he has been able to tap to his real self. And that real self, which is the soul, is unlimited. But instead of using that ability in Krishna service, because the devotee knows Nitya Krishna Das, that's who I am. So when the devotee understands that I am this soul, and he taps to the energy or the capacity attributed to the soul, he doesn't use that for his own self-aggrandizement. He uses that in the service of Krishna. Hiranyakashipu understood the same thing. But he didn't say Nitya Krishna Das. He says, Ham Bogi, Sudoham, Balawan Suki, you know? I am the enjoyer. This ability should serve me. Does it make sense? The Hiranyakashipu factor of people who understand that they're not this body, and the devotee factor, what differentiates them when they tap to that ability of the soul is what that ability is used for. In one simple sentence. Same thing with the yogis. The yogis also understand that they are not the soul. But then there's also a problem. Because when they have all these mixed cities, then maybe they start thinking, you know what? Maybe I'm actually God. I mean, if I can create my own planet, if I can do all of this, then, you know. The devotee has the same ability, but he's saying, no, this belongs to Krishna. So, understanding that you're not this body, and actually beginning to tap with the ability of the soul, what differentiates you as the devotee and people like Hiranyakashipu is one basic factor that you understand that that ability is not from you, is not for your enjoyment, is for the service of Krishna. Once that flips, finish. You can still have the same understanding, the same ability, the same power, but then you become Hiranyakashipu or you become, you know, present day Hiranyakashipus. We know them. That's the difference. I don't know if it makes.
The understanding
decides if you're selfish or selfless, but then the understanding has to be there from the onset before you start to make that endeavor. The devotee goes through a lot of, in quotes, tapasya also, maybe not as hard as Hiranyakashipu did, but from the very beginning he knows what he's doing it for. I'm doing this to please Krishna. I'm doing this to understand who I am so I can please Krishna more. I'm doing this to get in tune with who I really am so that I can serve Krishna more. You know, Hiranyakashipu from the very beginning knows, I want to be God. That was the goal from the very beginning. You know, he was clear about it. So if we as devotees were not clear about why do we know that we are not this body, then there's a problem. He knew what he wanted from the very beginning. And that's the good thing about demons sometimes. They know what they want. And they're focused on it. They follow it. They don't switch. You know, they find somehow how to get it. But the thing with us devotees is that sometimes we just don't even know what we want. We say we are not this body, but then we sometimes see that there's a different body, and then, you know, we think maybe somebody is better than somebody, or there's so many things in the head. But if from the very beginning we understand that we are not this body, and why are you not this body? Why are you a spirit soul? What is the function of that spirit soul? Then everything is clear. Like in Hiranyakashipu, he was clear from the day one what he wanted. I want to be immortal. I want to be God. Was very clear about that. And even when Brahma says it's not possible, he still found a way to go around it to get to that point. So if devotees can just be that focused, imagine what will happen. That's just the simple truth. That you can understand the same thing as the demons, but what does that understanding serve determines the ability of that understanding. That's the bottom line.
That's simple.
Is it short?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going with this.
Okay.
Question. How can a demon come in back with the soul, which is with, whose
definition is actually to be part and parcel of God, and man realizes that he is part and parcel of God. I mean, that's a bit contradictory. Because you say he comes in touch with the soul and his powers, and that's a bit
simple. It's very simple. Free will. That's the reason why you are not here.
Because
free will. Free will.
I'm in touch with the soul.
Free will. Same thing also. You have heard that you are not this body. I have heard. We're practicing devotional service back to yoga, which is higher than what these demons are doing. But still, we're here. We're here. In the material world. You're asking me where? You and I have heard this. Forget details. Forget details. Stick to the principle. You and I have heard. We're not trying to do semantics here. We're not trying to pick words. Let's be very straight. You and I have heard that Krishna is God. You and I practice bhakti yoga. But somehow or the other, you and I... Okay, let me speak for me. I am still not a pure devotee. Why? But what if not? That's the point. But I know I'm not. So, it's the same thing also. You can say, but he has also gotten in contact with this soul, but why is he still acting contrary? Because he has the free will to do so. Mystic power comes from
something else, not from being in contact with the soul.
Someone who is acting on the level of the body cannot exhibit such supernatural powers. The grossest form of identification of the body is animals. Have you ever seen any animal with mystic power? That's the grossest form of bodily identification. That's the same. That's what, see, they're not using it for their body. Understand one point. That is not identifying with the body. They've gone beyond the body, but they're not using it to please Krishna. They're using it for their self-aggrandizement. That's what we're saying. It's not contradictory. Understand the point. See, this is word juggler. Like I said, we're not into this. Hold on. Your point is, how can you say that you're not using something from the body if you're using it for your self-aggrandizement? That's what you're saying. Okay, simple. Let's leave philosophy simple. We say we want to make something for Krishna. For example, you want to cook sweets for Krishna. This is very simple logic, very simple example. Deep down inside you, you go to the kitchen, you know very well you want to eat gulab jamuns. But you put Krishna in front of it. Today, I'm making gulab jamuns for Krishna. Krishna will like some nice gulab jamuns and halava. And you offer it. But even before you made that gulab jamun, you knew very well that you were craving gulab jamuns. And it was because you wanted to eat gulab jamuns, you went and made it for the deity. But does it negate the fact that you've offered it? It doesn't negate that fact. You've still offered it anyway. You've put Krishna in the picture anyway. But does the original idea change that you have been the one meditating about how you wanted to feast on gulab jamuns? Does that fact change? Same thing. So you were saying, but how can he use something for his body if he's not in tune with the body?
No,
if
he's in tune with the soul, how can you use
same? When he identified, that's what I'm saying. You know, Kashyapu went through so much austerities, got so much power, but then what did he use it for? You think he didn't realize and was able to sustain his life air in his bones? You think so? You think it was by accident he just put his life air in his bones? That was accident.
No, but by his big demoniac super ego, being this huge ego, he was like we are doing tapasya.
So just by...
Based on our huge ego, I'm going to do it, I'm going to win... I did this,
great tapasya
for my ego.
So you say ego is enough to sustain your life air in your bones?
Probably.
Just ego.
If it's big enough,
then we will all be immortal.
Huh?
If it's that simple to sustain your life air inside your bones, that ego is just the factor that you just should be proud enough. That's what you're saying. It's pride. You should be proud enough, then you can do it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So pride is enough to sustain your life air in your bones? Does it make sense?
That's my hypothesis.
No, please. Understand this. That just that you have the pride, just having enough pride can help you sustain your life air in your bones. Does that make sense to you? No, just think about it a little bit. That I have enough pride, and that pride is enough to sustain my life. Even when the body is deteriorated, I can still keep my life air in my bones. Just having pride can do that.
I mean, determination.
Okay.
If
that's how you understand it, then, you know, there's a lot of work to do. But definitely not here. But, you know, in summary, pride cannot do that. You know, this is just logic. This is not philosophy. This is very simple. Pride cannot sustain your life.
But why are they, after realizing so proud, that they use this mystic power for pride? Why that's contradictory. I don't know.
It's not contradictory. It's not it's not contradictory. It's because, listen. I told you from the very beginning, Hirakashipu started out wanting to be God. It was very clear. It had a purpose. So from the very beginning, the goal is defined.
But it's not difficult wanting to be God. This is a huge ego.
You don't understand. I think you're contradicting yourself. You're saying, why did he change? He didn't change. From the very beginning, he was clear what he wanted.
Hold
on a second. If this is difficult for you to understand, let me break it to you.
I mean, in material world, there is a price for this mystic power. That's the way I understand.
So wait. Hold on a second. What is this price for the mystic power?
Tapasya. Krishna said, if you do this, and this, you will get mystic power. You will be stupid, but you will get mystic power.
So what does the tapasya help you realize?
Hold on.
Don't distract yourself. Come back. You said tapasya gives you mystic power. But what do you realize by doing this tapasya?
Obviously nothing. If you don't change your motivation, it's nothing.
The tapasya, you just said tapasya helps you realize mystic powers. Helps you get the mystic power. Okay, so when you get the mystic power through tapasya, why is it contradictory that you have used mystic power to get tapasya to get mystic power? That is your goal. How is that contradictory?
I'm saying that you didn't realize nothing spiritual in the process. There is a price for tapasya. Krishna said, you do tapasya, you got this mystic power, then use it for whatever you want. But this is not having this.
Mystic power is not spiritual?
Huh?
Mystic power is not spiritual?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
No, you are telling me, because if you say mystic power is not spiritual, why don't we have it? You and I.
Because we are materially not advanced enough.
So material, spiritual, same thing. You're saying we're materially not advanced enough. We're materially not advanced enough. That's why we don't have mystic power. Materially or not spiritually advanced enough. So according to your definition, material life gives you spirit, gives you mystic power.
Yeah, some kinds of material engagement gives you mystic power. That's my understanding.
See, hold on. You say your understanding. Is this backed by any scripture or sanskrit?
Yeah, Chandra Mahi Maharaj had a lecture now in his life. He said it's all material. The only manipulation of material energy, but you have
no. See, understand. Don't get confused. If you have mystic power and you are using it for your own personal interest, that is material. Understand that. No, hold on, hold on. Understand that. No, hold on. Hold on. So what are you saying? If you use it for spiritual, it's spiritual. What are you saying?
I'm using my heart for spiritual and become spiritual. So I use material and become spiritual.
You are confusing yourself. You are confusing yourself. No, no, no. Hold on, hold on. No, no, no. You, on one hand, you tell me that it is spiritual. On one hand, you...
I'm saying it's material from the beginning to the end, but when you use it for creation, it becomes spiritual.
So how is that possible? If it becomes spiritual at some point, why?
Our God becomes spiritual.
No, no, so what is it that makes it... No, no, hold on, just there. What is it that makes it spiritual?
Using it for creation.
So what did I say that is different?
You said that Hiram Akashi realized that he is not his body, that he is the soul. That, but I'm not agreeing with this. You said this, I understood it like this. I'm sorry. But maybe you're right. I'm just not agreeing with him. It's alright.
You know what, let's not too long, class. Let's, I think you're confusing yourself because you're repeating the same thing I'm saying and then you're saying it's not, so I don't understand where you're coming from. For me, it makes no sense. You're saying the same thing I'm saying and then you're saying, but no, I mean, I don't get
I'm not saying the same, I say that the spirit, that this mystic powers are material and that this great genius didn't realize nothing about the soul. That's my understanding, but they didn't come in.
That is your understanding, but that's not the scriptural understanding.
Okay, then.
Your understanding and my understanding is irrelevant. Please quote scripture, don't tell me what you think.
So I'm asking, what does scripture say about the
okay, we will discuss. Let's not disturb the class, okay, we will discuss.
Dante
Chichita Charita Rita Ki. Nita Goro Prabhupada.